Welcome to the 474th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. We had 88 degrees today. Welcome to summertime. It's the beginning of May, so our humidity's starting to build back up. So runs have got to get earlier. The days of waiting for the sun to come up are long gone. But that's okay. That's okay. Just 17 more days to the Cruel Jewel 56-mile race. I am still planning to toe the line. My toes seem to be okay. My ankle's getting okay. I just hope it holds out for about 24 hours when we're climbing mountains, but we'll see. We'll see how far I can get and how my ankle holds out, but been doing my rehab exercises and slowly running more than walking. The practice wellness challenge, wellness walking challenge finished the last day of April, and we celebrated by having a group walk for those members in town. So we met over along the Peace River at the harbor and did a walk, watching the sun come up. We saw a manatee, we saw a dolphin. The funniest thing, I guess, that happened was when we're trail running, we often eat these bars called Betty Lou bars. And they're not bad. You know, they're kind of like a Fig Newton, and they come with various fruit flavors inside. So this walk was no man left behind. So when we made a turn, the plan was to put a Betty Lou bar down, and the last guy that made the turn would pick the Betty Lou bar up and bring it back to the finish. Well, apparently about 10 feet from the turnaround, the last people witnessed a crow getting to the Betty Lou bar quicker than they did. So the crow got away with the Betty Lou bar. Apparently crows are pretty good at getting through wrappers, but anyway, so that's how that went. But we did have some leftover for people afterwards. It was a good walk, and everybody enjoyed it. We had a lot of participation. Made me really happy that people are interacting and supporting each other, because that is what I'm trying to do with this practice, is to give people a place, a safe place to be plant-based, a safe place to want to improve their lifespan and health span and be mobile and supportive group. And that's what we're actually getting with these walking challenges. So this month we're extending it so that people can take where they were and dial it up a notch, whether it's pace or distance or both, or just consistency. And we're supporting each other in the endeavor. So looking forward to that a whole lot. When I changed my practice from a traditional cardiology practice to more of a wellness practice, a plant-based wellness practice, and hung up the catheters and picked up a spatula, it took a little bit of the chutzpah out of me because I worked a long time to get to the point in my career where I was good at what I did. And to all of a sudden say, hey, we don't need this anymore, is a little bit of a transition. And certainly there wasn't a lot of support from my colleagues or the hospitals or anything else. But it was the best thing I ever did because we've, you know, again, the practice has attracted people that are really interested in becoming more healthy and active. And if I reflect just a little bit over the span of my cardiology career, you know, I kind of giggle a little bit. You know, I finished my fellowship when I was about 29. I did an academic job for 3 years where I ran an echo department. And my confidence was in my abilities to do echocardiography and do certain procedures around that. Stress echo was brand new. We had pioneered it at University of Pittsburgh. And I gained a lot of experience in doing procedures and teaching and continuing to learn, but there wasn't a whole lot of patient-physician bonds formed because of the clinic and the residents and fellows and things like that. And so when I went into private practice, it was a whole new ball game running a practice. At first, I was part of a practice for a couple of years and then went out on my own. And when I look back on, and actually what brought it up a little bit was I had a patient in the office in his 90s, and he's still part of my practice, and he was back when I started. And when I look back, I was in my 30s, and he was in his 60s when the practice, you know, started. And he told me in this recent office visit that, you know, I said, you know, if I don't, if he didn't, I told him he needed a heart catheterization back then, and ultimately he ended up with a bypass. And I told him that if he didn't trust me to do it, then he should seek another cardiologist because he needed to have confidence in his cardiologist. And when I look back on that, and I told him, I was like, I don't know why you had confidence in me. I was only 35 years old probably at the time. But he, when I said that to him, that made him have confidence in me because he knew I was confident in the way I could do the procedures. But when I look at, you know, young physicians and cardiologists coming up now, I kind of giggle a little bit because, you know, at the first part of your career, you're trying to prove yourself as worthy, that you can make great clinical decisions and you're good at procedures, especially if you're a cardiologist. Your hands are good. That was something to be noted for. And, you know, I had good hands and, you know, could do the procedure and I was steady and my temperament is such that, you know, I was willing to do what I need to do and stay calm. I still am still able to stay calm and do what I need to do, but I do different things now. But, you know, at that point, again, my career was based on procedures and medication titration and the like. And I had a relationship with my patients, and I always knew about them, and I tried to lead by example and get them to do things, to exercise and to eat right, whatever that was. But there was a significant gap in my life experience and my patients' life experience. I was in my 30s, they were in their late 60s. I never thought about how their problems started and why it started. Why did they get cardiovascular disease? Why did they get diabetes? Why had they gained a bunch of weight? What was their life circumstances and how had they changed as they had gotten older? I had no life experience of that, you know. So now at 61, looking back at some of these things, you know, I giggle about some of the earlier things, but I have a different perspective on the struggles that people have. I think a lot of times people are the struggle when you have young children and everything that's going on and life is so busy. We only hope that when retirement comes, it'll be easy. And it's really a whole new set of challenges for people, negotiating retirement, negotiating empty nest, negotiating health issues that you didn't see coming because you were too busy. And I have a perspective on that now, having watched a lot of my patients grow old and having grown old with them. And now I make jokes that, you know, I'm the dinosaur cardiologist. I'm the old cardiologist at the hospital that walks in with all the new young people, and I'm not doing procedures anymore. It's not because my hands are shaky and my eyes are bad and I can't stand up. It's because I've chosen a different path. But nevertheless, that same insecurity as when I was 30 as far as am I being respected for what I do now, just like am I being respected for what I did then. And the reality of it is I'm at the perfect age to be a cardiologist because I'm the age of most cardiac patients. I'm at the age where things go wrong. It's when people start to have heart attacks and cancer starts to increase and the wheels, what you call the wheels, start to fall off. My grandparents' diabetes were diagnosed, you know, in their 50s. So with my dad's and my mother's diabetes in their 50s and early 60s. So I'm at the age that the wheels fall off, and I can see what kind of leads to the wheels falling off, and I can also see from experience how to keep the wheels on. The one thing that I did know at 35 is that I had a bad family history, and I needed to take care of myself, and I didn't want to be a statistic. I didn't want to be a cardiologist with stents or a bypass or diabetes, and so I have practiced what I preached as far as diet and exercise, and of course the diet part has evolved quite a bit from eat healthy to being a plant-based cardiologist. But I think that I'm able to see the tests of time in myself and in my colleagues and my plant-based colleagues versus my traditional colleagues, And eyes wide open now, as far as letting the whole story unfold. I think the current state of my practice can be summarized by saying, how can you stay young at heart and keep your heart young? And I believe that's what we're on to with our plant-based wellness practice. The Cruel Jewel 56-mile race is in the mountains of Georgia. I'll be running through the night up and down mountainside, sometimes a path will be narrow. It might be slippery. It might be muddy. There might be snakes. I'm hoping they're not snakes. And I know there are there, but I hope I don't see them. And the question would be, why? Why would I put myself through this? Why do I have to do this? And the first reason that comes to my mind is I really want the challenge. I want the challenge for my mind and my body to troubleshoot, to overcome fears, will I be able to do it? If not, how will I react to it? How will I troubleshoot? How do I train my body to endure such a thing so that I can actually apply some of those life lessons to my practice? When I can take part in these events, I feel like I'm still growing. My mind is growing. My physical capabilities are still growing, as opposed to just sitting down and saying I'm retired now and sit on the sidelines and wait for the curtain to come down. And it's very difficult for a lot of people to see, you know, I'm certainly not alone. There are not going to be a lot of people in my age group, but if you look around the country at ultras, there are a lot of people in my age group and older. There are a lot of people in my age group and older that are doing gymnastics, kayaking, paddleboarding, you know, playing competitive tennis, dancing, doing, you know, yoga. There's all kinds of things that people are doing my age, but it's not highlighted. And we have to prepare for those challenges now more so than we did when we were 35. Not to say that you don't need to train for an ultra marathon when you're 35, but there's a little bit more preparation that goes into it at this age. But it doesn't mean it can't be done. And it doesn't mean that life has to cease being exciting and challenging once people get into the, as I will describe it, mom age. So my practice now is about helping people that wake up at 55, 60, 65 and say, oh no, the wheels are starting to fall off. How do we patch these things back on so we can get on with an exciting life? That's what this practice is all about. Too many people are caught up taking fistful of medications and getting yearly carotid ultrasounds and bone densities to decide whether or not they're healthy, as opposed to seeing whether they're healthy as far as how far can they walk, what pace can they walk, how high a hill can they go up, how far can they kayak. That's the kind of things that I think we should be looking at, as opposed to just monitoring people's decline as they do nothing and physicians do nothing to change it. I'm lucky to have Addie Meinrich, my daughter, as our registered dietitian, and she also has an interest of her own, not only helping me with what I've described and helping people to conquer this plant-based nutrition scheme of things and help them to get back into their kitchen and make a healthy plate and turn their plate around according to the disease. But she's also very much interested in family nutrition. So many young people are so distracted by all the things that are going on in life that they've never seen their kitchen, and never has there been more of an opportunity for people to eat every meal out and every meal full of toxins and unhealthy food. So the other aim at our program will be the other end of the spectrum to help young families figure out how to feed their family in a more healthy way. And I'm going to have Addie, as she's coming back from maternity leave here, back on the podcast so she can describe her goals for and I guess her passion for that aspect of nutrition as well. Not to say that she doesn't have great interest in reversing disease as I do, but the idea of helping people on that other end of the spectrum not get to the point where they have to backpedal at 55 to 60 would be a fabulous thing. And to show you what kind of a problem is, in the United States, there were $772 billion in pharmacy costs last year, up 13.5%. The top-selling drug was semaglutide, which, again, was the Ozempic-type drugs, the top-selling drug for 2023. Retail pharmacy sold a lot of those medications, $307 billion worth, or 42%. Mail-order pharmacies, 28%. Clinics, 18.5%. Most of those clinics were, you know, cancer drugs and IV infusion. And then non-federal hospitals, $37 billion. Clinics saw a 15% increase in revenue, mainly on injections of cancer therapies, immunotherapy, and neurological therapies for Alzheimer's. Something is really wrong when we're spending this much money on medications that don't fix the problem. Band-Aids. It is very rare for people to get off medications once they're put on. Nobody wants to stop the medications. The reality of it is the medications aren't fixing the problems, and they're doing very little to delay the progression of problems. The root cause is what we eat, what we're exposed to, and our lack of mobility and exercise. A study was released looking at stair climbing out of the UK. They did a meta-analysis of over 400,000 people, 9 studies, people aged 35 to 84, half of which were females. The more stairs you climb, the more benefits. And those who climbed the most stairs in a day had a 39% decreased risk for death from heart disease, a 24% decrease in death from any cause, just climbing stairs, the things that people avoid. So if you have stairs anywhere in your house, or you have the opportunity to go upstairs anywhere you can, take them. If you live in a ranch house and only have 2 or 3 stairs, use them. Go up and down them. Go up them front ways. Go up them sideways. Go down easy. Use them for mobility with your ankles. There's all kinds of things you can do. Upstairs, downstairs. Take a weight. Go up 3 stairs, down 3 stairs. Use the stairs. When older gentlemen come into my office, one of the first things they want done with their blood work is their PSA, the prostate-specific antigen. Because if that number comes back good, then they feel like they're not going to get prostate cancer or that they don't have prostate cancer. That's not entirely correct. The test was never really designed to diagnose prostate cancer. Certainly, if the number is very high, there's a good odds that there's probably prostate cancer. But a negative number doesn't really mean anything in reality. Prostate cancer is usually a very slow-growing cancer, and it is said that more men die with prostate cancer than of prostate cancer. But men tend to be more afraid of that cancer than anything, and rightly so, because the treatment is barbaric. The biopsies are barbaric. The surgeries almost always leave men with some sort of dysfunction, chronic conditions that there's really no treatment for. We know that men who eat more vegetables than men who don't have a lower incidence of prostate cancer. Men who consume soy products, tofu in particular, have less prostate cancer than men who don't. Men that eat dairy have more prostate cancer than men that do eat dairy. There was a new study came out that looked at the progression of disease, the progression of prostate cancer in men that ate plants. And they looked at quartiles of people, men that ate plants after the diagnosis of prostate cancer. And as you might guess, being plant-based audience, the men that ate the more plants, the more plant-based you are, the less chance of disease progression you would have after the diagnosis of prostate cancer. Matter of fact, the highest versus the lowest quartile, there was a 47% decrease in cancer progression. Gleason score is often how prostate cancer is diagnosed and staged, and the higher the Gleason score, the worse typically the more invasive cancer is. The men that ate the most plants had a Gleason score of greater than 7. So after the diagnosis, the men that ate the most plants had a 55% decreased risk of disease progression. That ain't carnivore, baby. That's eating plants. So the more plants you eat, the less meat you eat, the better your prognosis for your prostate. So a PSA is not going to save you, but your broccoli will. So if you don't think plant-based nutrition is manly, just imagine what the surgery for prostate cancer does to your manlyhood. It might make you want to eat more plants. Sometimes I don't know what I'm going to talk about on the podcast every week. I've been putting the podcast out for almost every week for 474 weeks and coming up with things to talk about usually occur in the practice or things that I read and hopefully things by some magical way go together and I can put something together that makes sense. My last patient of the day said, I have one final question. I heard you're not supposed to put bananas and blueberries together in your smoothie because it negates the benefits of the blueberries, the flavonoids. It's like, well, I've not come across that, but I will certainly look into it. And lo and behold, there's a study out from Loma Linda, UC Davis. Yeah, it's in Loma Linda, I believe, UC Davis, where they looked at smoothies. They looked at whether people had blueberries and bananas in their smoothie, just blueberries in their smoothie, or a pill of flavonoids, and then they measured people's flavonoids, and the people that blended the banana up in their smoothies had less available flavonoids by a substantial amount. Very small study, looking at smoothies only. So you'd say, oh my God, I can't put smoothies, or I can't put bananas in my smoothies now, or I'm going to lose all the benefits of the blueberries that I eat. Well, first of all, I'm not a big smoothie person. And I guess it depends on why you're eating the smoothies. I think that, and none of this has been proven just to eat the fruits. So the reason why the bananas, they have a thing called polyphenol oxidase. And turns out that even the blueberries have some, but it's what causes browning. So things that, you know, the speckles on the bananas, when they brown, that is the increase of this polyphenol oxidase increasing. So pears are very high, avocados very high because, again, you cut them and they brown, apples to some degree. But all these same fruits and vegetables have all kinds of other good benefits as well. And it's not, everything is not wiped out by this polyphenol oxidase. In fact, if you look at polyphenol oxidase, it has a lot of anti-cancer properties to it as well, decreasing blood vessel growth into cancers. There have been studies in breast cancer tissue and colon tissue. So it kind of comes back to fruits and vegetables are very good. They have a lot of different chemicals and a lot of different benefits. Some process of them, sometimes processing them decreases some of the benefits. Other times processing increases the benefits in the way of tomatoes and leucopenes and increasing anti-cancer properties where cooking is involved there. But nevertheless, yes, you can do, you know, measure one thing out of a fruit or combination and maybe see a decrease, but we're not looking at the overall benefit in the person. So they didn't look at somebody that ate a blueberry smoothie versus a banana blueberry smoothie versus somebody that just took a pill and how well did they do, you know, 6-10 years down the road. Begin again, that's a small process, a small part of their day, hopefully. I am a proponent of eating your fruit whole instead of blending it up, unless you're looking for calories. And then when you're looking for calories, maybe you're not so worried about your flavonoids from your blueberries at that point. We're just trying to get calories in. I know a lot of people, if they had to do just a blueberry and kale smoothie, probably wouldn't do the smoothie. The banana is kind of what makes it. So they would be looking to put something in to sweeten it up. And bananas are great when it comes to that aspect. They have fiber, fructose, potassium, and a whole host, again, of antioxidants in and of themselves. I don't know why people want to throw bananas under the bus, but don't worry about eating your bananas. I think it'll be good. But again, I would have you eat your fruit rather than do smoothies. I think it leads to less overconsumption. But again, if somebody's trying to get in more calories, or you have somebody that's kind of sick and you can't get food into them, yes, it's fine to process all those things together. The good will far outweigh the bad as far as things that enzymes that get turned on and off. I'm very grateful to be able to sit back and talk with my patients, whether they're 30 or 60 or 80 or 90 years old. But I especially like hearing the stories from some of my older folks. Their life lessons and the things that they've experienced are priceless. I hope that my patients have gleaned as much from me as I have from them over the years, because they've certainly given me an education and allowed me to have a new perspective and stuck with me as the practice changed. Again, you know, we have several people that have been in the practice since the very, very beginning. So when I was a young, fresh out of training cardiologist till now, a spatula wielding cardiologist doing mobility classes on Mondays in my shorts, they've stuck by, and I truly appreciate them. I'm trying to lead by example. I think I have, Hard Knocks University has allowed me to triage a lot of things, either from running injuries or life injuries or life experiences. And I've seen the other side and the running community and the endurance community of what can be in older individuals. I'm motivated by them. I like to motivate people by them. I hope this podcast motivates you to all the different potentials that are out there, and that you don't have to be limited, and that you can turn back the clock and you can get back on the wagon and improve and get off of your medications. And we'd love to help you in our practice do that. So if you have some interest in talking to us, please give an email at jamie@drdelaney.com. You can go over to the website, drdelaney.com. If you think you'd like to join our practice one way or another, there's several different levels, and you'd like to talk to us about it, you can also call the office or email us, and we'll set up an appointment to talk to you free of charge so that you can figure out how to get your health journey so that you can experience as much out of life and as long a life and a healthy life as you possibly can. So thank you very much for listening. Get out and get your walk in, get your vegetables in, eat as many plants as you can, and talk to you next week. I'm also going to have frozen banana and blueberry and cacao powder with some soy milk as dessert when this is over too, so go enjoy yours as well.